How does a community activist like Suresh Grover see the criminal law and criminal justice system in relation to combating racial violence?
In terms of racism and the attacks on people, I don't believe you need further legislation. I believe there's adequate legislation in the Criminal Justice Act, in the Public Order Act, and in the Criminal and Evidence Act, which, if applied and implemented seriously in attacks which are motivated by racism, would be adequate treatment meted out to perpetrators. I think it's a bogus argument that we need further legislation which defines racial harassment, etc. Yes, there are improvements that need to be made, and there needs to be an extension of democratic rights for people who are suffering racial attacks rather than curtailment of rights of perpetrators. I believe justice can be attained and gained through the existing system if it becomes more responsive and accountable. We're talking about the courts, the police, we're talking about local authorities. In my view, the police are a racist institution. If they are going to be taken seriously by people who are victims of racial harassment, they immediately need to do two things. One is to ensure that there is racism taken seriously within the force, and nowhere is the other signs that that is being done. Secondly, there are metropolitan force orders on racial harassment, which no single officer takes seriously. The CID, which is the investigating body dealing with criminal activity or assaults on people, openly admit that they don't take these force orders seriously. How can they have a victim-oriented approach when they're supposed to be partial, for example, objectively? I think it's better for the police to say, well, we can't have a victim-oriented approach, and that's it, rather than give a policy statement which is obviously not workable and won't be workable and actually confuses people and creates more expectations than they can give. Local authorities will provide some sort of support for victims. I think that's the change in the last 5 years, but they will not take any action against perpetrators, which is decisive thing that needs to be done today. In terms of the courts, in my view, they don't even understand the nature of racial harassment in this country. Either they minimize it, or they believe that it's not an aggravating factor in an attack. I'm not proposing race awareness training for magistrates or judges. I just think that the system needs an overall change, and that's the only way it will become responsive to racial harassment.
Why does Suresh Grover think racial violence has come so late onto the political agenda?
I think we've won one battle, and that is to ensure that people think there is a problem, which has taken us, I think, 30 years. I know why I think why it is so late on the agenda, because I think the British system is actually institutionally and overtly racist. And I'm not using this in a psychological or biological way. I just think people, when they talk about racism, forget its history and causes and how it's built into the economic and social system.
It is clear from Suresh Grover's analysis that he feels there is much to be done.
I think we need to do things immediately. And the immediate things that need to be done are open support for victims in their needs, whether it means moving them from housing estates or providing them with more support, which also may mean, for example, stopping the psychological damage that takes place in a family that suffers perpetual racial harassment or very violent attacks on them. It immediately means that we begin to take action against racists and attackers in order to marginalize them or in order to create a situation where they feel afraid to attack people. I don't think that is being done by local authorities or by the central government or any other agencies. It also means that you need to mobilize politically. It cannot be done simply by legally or socially. Forces and communities and ordinary folk who will understand the nature of racism and build policies on how to combat them and implement these policies practically.
For a theoretical perspective on the subject, we turn to Barnard Hess, who now teaches sociology at the University of East London. Like Suresh Grover, he also was involved in the monitoring of racial harassment when he worked for the London Borough of Waltham Forest.
The clear finding was that during the 1980s in Waltham Forest, there were two peak periods of intense racial harassment. The first peak period was in 1981. The second peak period was in 1985. Now, in 1981, one of the more celebrated examples, if you like, was the death of the Khan family in a firebombing. There were a number of firebomb attacks in 1981, and even the local newspaper actually produced, as a result of its own investigations, the headline that Waltham Forest was a dangerous place for ethnic minorities to live in. A whole cluster of firebomb attacks took place in 1985, so much so that we actually named that year the burning of the houses in our published research. And I think the important point to make about the research is not so much the collection of incidents that we were able to record and the narrative we were able to write, but the analysis that we were able to carry out in terms of conceptualizing racial harassment in a way that went beyond the usual catalogue of horrific incidents.
Barnard Hess and his colleagues undertook a major survey of the racial harassment in the area. This was published in 1992 with the title Beneath the Surface.
Now, the key findings of that research were that racial harassment did have an established pattern. That was an important thing to say, principally because the Home Office of the Metropolitan Police seemed to think that racial harassment was random and therefore only a proactive response could be developed if you could establish a pattern. Clearly then, no pattern, the only response available is a reactive one. We define the pattern of racial harassment in two ways. On the one hand, you could talk about the objective incidence of racial harassment, where you see the statistics. That can be conceptualized in terms of the spread of racial harassment. What does that mean? Well, it means that at any particular geographical location, you can see a concentration of racial harassment over a period of time. That's what we call its entrenchment. You can measure that in terms of reports to the police and local agencies. And at the same time, you can see a dispersal of racial harassment across different locations, in different sites, places, that we call the dispersal. So it's very important always to look at the spread of racial harassment to understand how it was beginning to mark out a particular vicinity. The second dimension of a pattern relates to the subjective impact of racial harassment, what you might call racial victimization. Now, this has the features of a scenario. It's very predictable. And we saw four dimensions of this scenario. Firstly, racial victimization tended to be multiple. A number of things happened at the same time. You might be spat at, you might be abused, you might be assaulted. A second dimension was that racial victimization was cyclical. Things tended to happen in cycles across a number of days, weeks, every month, every summer. A third dimension that we identified was that racial harassment had a secondary victimization attached to it. Often people who've experienced racial harassment and have been victimized in the first instance are then in a position where they have to report their experience to the police or to the local authority. At that point, it's possible and at times highly likely that they will not be believed or they find themselves having to prove their experience in a way that goes beyond all expectation. In a sense, they become victimized again, secondary victimization. And the final dimension, and perhaps this represents the takeoff for further theoretical thinking about this, is what we call spatial victimization. The fact that the mobility of people becomes limited. The fact that the borough where you live becomes conceptualized in terms of places that you can safely travel to or reside with a sufficient degree of security. It seemed to us those were very important dimensions to look at.
These findings have led Hess to think more about the detail of racial violence, where, when, and how it happens, its precise location in time, in geography, and in history. What he refers to as the questions of space and place that have so far received little attention.